When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition comic book podcast, where we discuss the famous, infamous runs and story arcs about the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul, what's happening? Been a while.
It has been a while. Not to the listeners who are binging. You just listened to us a few seconds ago. But for us, it's been about, what, 3 weeks since we did this?
At least.
At least, yeah. But this, and I will apologize to the listeners, the episodes have been coming out kind of sporadically. I'm calling 2021 the year of late release, which sounds dirty, but it's
not. Is that a euphemism?
No, but hopefully we're coming to the end of 2021 and a new year will dawn and hopefully we'll be back on schedule, back on track. That being said, maybe in another universe, we've been releasing episodes every 2 weeks.
Oh, like would you suggest that it was a multiverse?
Exactly. So Brian and I have decided that we just going to have a little chat about the multiverse. The multiverse has been quite the thing recently, at least in the cinematic universe. A little while ago, at the time of this recording, about, I guess, a week ago or so, Spider-Man Far From Home, the trailer for that has been released, and it is showcasing a multitude of Spider-verses. Now, it looks like...
I do like the fact that Spider-Man gets his own verse.
Yes, well...
Right, everybody else, it's a multiverse, but then with Spider-Man, it's a Spider-verse.
It's a Spider-verse. Yeah, Hulk doesn't get his own verse. Hulk-a-verse. Mm-hmm.
Batman doesn't get his own verse.
He sort of does.
Yeah, well, we'll hit on that shortly, but we don't call it Batverse.
So the multiverse in comics has been a long tradition going way back to, what, the 1950s or 60s?
Well, I think it's slightly before that, right? I mean, let's set something right here. Multiverses in both the DC and Marvel world, and let's be honest, that's where primarily the multiverses exist, at least in the way we're going to talk about it. It's screwy stuff, right? For some reason, the multiverses exist is due to acquisitions by comic book companies of other comic book companies, right? So we get back into Timely, we get back into Charleston, the limited amount of research I did, as near as I could tell, and other comic book scholars who know way more than I do on this, we're going back at DC, like we're in the Golden Age, and it was a way to bring the Justice Society into sort of the DC timeline and meeting up with the Justice League, and it was a way to bring the Justice Society. We're looking at the cusp of, right, the Golden Age and the Silver Age. Am I getting this? People will correct us if we're wrong.
No, that's exactly. I mean, that's why I said the 1950s. Again, we're doing this on the fly. Mm-hmm. Brian and I called each other just before recording and said, "Hey, let's talk about multiverses." Okay. So,
and neither of us, I believe, have a PhD in multiverse.
In one universe, we do, just not in this one.
Not in this one.
I always associate the beginning of the multiverse with the Flash of Two Worlds. The Golden Age Flash and then the Silver Age Flash. And they have that very famous issue where the two kind of get merged together.
And perhaps, if not the most iconic comic book cover, certainly top 10.
Yes, I'd put that up there with Superman's first, you know, raising the car over his head and Spider-Man swinging with the villain under his arm. But yes, so I always see that as... You had the new Flash and you had writers who wanted to write about the old Flash and kind of tie them together. It's like, well, why are they different? And so you create the multiverse and that expands how you can tell stories and it kind of brings in other characters from previous iterations. And it just makes it very interesting to tie everything together.
It's initially a very exciting idea. Initially, that goes south quickly.
Yes, it does spiral out of control.
Every damn time.
Yep, it spirals way out of control, which brings me to my favorite part about a multiverse is when they do away with it. Get your crisis in there or, recently Marvel did Secret Wars. I thought that was really great. They bring everybody together, they fight for a bit, and then it's just one universe, which then spirals out of control.
Is this the Hickman or the Shooter?
Hickman.
Okay.
Hickman. That's why I said recently, not. The 80s aren't recent anymore.
I keep forgetting that the 80s aren't recently anymore.
It's quite a while ago.
Get off my yard.
Get off my yard.
with their new comics.
Yes. With your diversity. How dare you?
No, I mean, I think the multiverse, which is used by both Marvel and DC, it's used by other companies as well. I don't want to exclude, but the history of DC and Marvel kind of make it easier to talk about those two companies more than more recent companies.
I mean, and lots of franchises, Star Trek does multiverses and
right. We have the Mirrorverse going right now. We have in Star Trek comics, the Mirrorverse is happening that IDW is putting out. So,
but there's also the Kelvinverse, which is J.J. Abrams' verse. That's a separate Star Trek universe. That's when you get into different timelines, but then as opposed to different universes. And this is something that Marvel, as far as the MCU is concerned, is dealing with right now. There's a difference between a timeline and a universe. And it gets really wonky. It seems that Marvel, the MCU, is going all in on the multiverse thing with shows like Loki and Spider-Man. And pretty soon, Doctor Strange will be going for the multiverse of madness. And it just makes me wonder how far will this go and when will they rein it in?
Well, right, because there's always a reset. And at the end of the day, I have to confess that my beloved DC has more multiverse. I think we have more multiverse problems than Marvel does. Now, some of that is just history. But, I mean, my God, how many times has DC attempted to reset?
How many crises have there been?
Well, and it's not just crises, you know, it's...
Oh, no, you got your flashpoints.
Flashpoints and your convergences and your... It's, as a fan, it's frustrating. But also as a fan, it's frustrating when every time there's a reset, the reset is frustrating, but then the batshit crazy that comes after the reset is also frustrating. I blame fans in some part for this because you have the continuity police and you know who you are out there.
Yeah.
Where you can't just tell a story without it having to tie into 600 other issues that have come over the past 80 years. And that's where you get Elseworlds, which was not a different, that would, but Elseworlds wasn't multiverse, except at some point I think they did try to tie, or they tried to give Elseworlds another universe. At the end of the day, my beloved Grant Morrison tried to set things straight with multiversity.
I love Grant Morrison and the fact that he has tried to reel everything in, to rein it all in. And at the same time, he says, but why don't we go crazy again? He simultaneously reels it in so that he can blow it up.
But I think it was a fair attempt. Multiversity was a fair attempt at just trying to say, here's how kooky all this is. Here's your 52 multiverses. Here's your guidebook. Play within it. Instead, everybody just ignored it. And then you get Death Metal that just once again was a reset. And what frankly was a really just tedious run on Justice League, bless Scott Snyder's heart. Ooh, Scott Snyder.
Yeah, we're going to tie it all together.
That was the most, I've read a lot of Justice League in my life. And that was the hardest Justice League to read. And it went on for years. And even if it didn't go on for years, it felt like decade.
Yeah, I dropped that a while back, actually, just because it wasn't tickling my fancy. The thing about a multiverse is it's incredibly useful. Like you can see that, okay, to use the MCU again as an example, there's a lot of disparate parts to the Marvel continuity. You have the MCU prime, but then there's also the Sony stuff. There was the Foxiverse, and then you had Netflix. All these things, they're all Marvel, but they're all separate. And it seems as if the MCU is just trying to use the multiverse to pull all these things, at least pick and choose. There's talk now of Daredevil and Kingpin and maybe Jessica Jones being pulled into the MCU prime, but they'll kind of do away with the other characters that didn't really work. Sony, of course, wants to have all of their different Spider-Mens all into one thing that they can work with, because they desperately want to be part of the MCU, but they want to be able to do their own thing, which is a recipe for disaster, but that's a different story. And then, of course, you have the X-Men that need to be folded into the MCU as well. So this is a good way of getting everyone into the right place.
Well, now, and this is film.
Yes, this is all film. Right.
So with DC, it's more comics related, and mm-hmm. with Marvel right now, it is more film oriented.
Well, it seems as if the DCEU, is it DCEU? The extended universe for DC does seem to be doing, because, you know, you have the Joker.
Right.
Which is its own thing. You have the Snyderverse, which is its own thing.
The less spoken of, the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But then you have, you know, the TV and the animated stuff. And
right. Well, so you got all the CW shows. Yeah, and now but
Ezra Miller, yeah, his Flash showed up on the Flash TV show. So it seems as if they do have a multiverse, but there's no connective tissue. They're just sort of doing all the movies sort of do their own things, and they sort of tangentially connect to each other. Not really, but kind of. It seems that the MCU actually has a plan to do this, which will spiral out of control. And DC just jumped the gun and spiraled out of control right away. I both like the idea of the multiverse, and I'm fearful of it in comics and in film, because it gets out of control so fast.
Right. It's a wonderful way to tell stories and a wonderful way to fold in characters. But I don't have a strong belief. I think Crisis on Infinite Earths did a really good job. And to me, I understand we're reaching way back at this point in comic history with Crisis. I'm trying not to just do this out of nostalgia. I feel like it did the best job of trying to fold everything in and normalize things.
Which it did.
For a little while. But then again, it's just everything falls apart, right? And then, you know, there had to be all these other crises and all these other things. And I don't know if Marvel has ever, maybe you as the Marvel expert, like let's call it a flashpoint of where Marvel was able to rein stuff in and keep it steady for longer than a year or two.
Marvel doesn't have the big problem that DC does, where it has all these multiverses and it tries to tie them together. Marvel constantly resets itself, you know, right. with the new number ones and the new continuity and, right. you know.
A new number one every other month.
Yeah, well, that has the benefit of constantly doing a rebirth, 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 over and over and over again. So it doesn't fall into the crazy, you know, out of control continuities that DC finds itself in. But, and again, it's the Hickman Secret Wars run was able to, because, you know, you had the Ultimate Universe and some various other universes that were just kind of plodding along doing their own thing. And he was able to combine those, keep the characters they wanted, like, you know, got to have Miles, and jettison all the things that they didn't want. And to a certain extent, that continuity is still in effect. The problem is that Marvel just does so many crossover events that just throws everything out of whack.
Well, every Marvel event changes the Marvel universe forever.
You make that joke a lot, but you're right.
I make that joke a lot, but I don't make that joke near as much as Marvel tells us they're doing it.
Yeah, it does change the Marvel universe forever. Unfortunately, the way it changes it is by just derailing most storylines, which then have to get themselves back on track again. But anyway,
I feel like we've jumped from multiverses to continuity.
I am of two minds on this. Most of the time, I don't really care about canon. If things change over time, that's how stories work. Stuff changes. Continuity, on the other hand, I mean, you know, you always want baseline continuity while having the canon change around them. I think that's perfectly fine.
Right. Well, but that's where the multiverse idea comes into play, right? Is, you know, the idea of the multiverses is you can tell different stories on different in different universes while still maintaining the comfortable for the fanboys world that lives in Earth Prime or whichever. And that's great. You know, that is great. But then when you try to use multiverses and then you try to collapse the multiverses into a continuity, like I understand why DC can't have the Justice Society exist in the 40s and then the Justice League exists later on, because then we have to solve the problem of why isn't Bruce Wayne, you know, 102 years old. I understand that, and I understand how you have to reset and move, but trying to do that while folding in multiverses, and it gets weird and it gets screwy. You know, again, like when I was researching this, I was like, I can't explain all of DC's multiverse resets.
No, you can't. Well, and there's the other factor. You have Marvel doing the sliding timescale where everything is really is happening in real time, but the years change to accommodate.
Right.
You know, whereas DC likes to stick to its desert, like this happened in the 70s, this happened in the 80s. But right. that means Bruce Wayne is 110 years old. So how do we fix that? Well, a cosmic being came down and changed everything.
Right. And it's the Huntress from this universe that then became the daughter of the thing. And then we collapse it. And Barbara was in a wheelchair. Now she's not in a wheelchair, except in this universe, she's in a wheelchair. But in this universe, we have Shazam. And in the other universe, he's Captain Marvel. And then we have Captain Carrot.
It's just,
at some point, it's like, let the multiverses be the multiverses. Stop trying to collapse it. And just say, like, because again, we're at some point we're arguing continuity, and at another point we're arguing multiverses, and that maybe they shouldn't exist together, and allow continuity to be screwy, allow multiverses. So the JSA comes over from another multiverse, just leave them alone, let them exist in the other multiverse, and maybe they come over and they exist in this multiverse now, or in this, you know, Earth Prime or whatever it is, and just say, hey, they were from this other area, now they're here, yay.
Exactly. So just treat it as Elseworlds or What If. It's its own thing. It doesn't have to fit into the main continuity or the main storylines. That can just be its own thing with all the multiverses and all the different continuities just existing on their own.
But the constant fiddling with the multiverse, I feel as if Marvel might be heading towards a bit of a disaster here. And hopefully they, if they can navigate this well and do it well, good for them, because that's good for comics.
Right.
If they can't, then they're going to have the absolute nut job maze of continuity and multiverses and resets that DC has dealt with and I think has hurt them over the years.
Well, the rumor, the buzz, the talk about the town is that the MCU is building towards Secret Wars. So they're going to blow everything up with a multiverse and then have, you know, a big Avengers event of Secret Wars where they whittle everything back down again. And that way they could get rid of old characters and start with new characters and recast and do all kinds of stuff. But I think it's all about recasting. Because you want to have Iron Man, but obviously you can't have Robert Downey Jr. You want to have a Captain America, but you can't have Chris Evans. So, because actual real people get old. There's a
Ahead.
You haven't seen the Eternals.
Not yet.
Sprite, the character who's always the Eternal Child. At the end of the movie, there's a big moment where she can choose to be a human and age, and she says, "Yes, I'd like to age." And I just laughed. I laughed when I watched that. It was like, because you know. People,
we just talk about that.
Yeah, human beings are allowed to get old. You can't have an eternal child in a movie, in sequels and so forth. Eternals, not going to spoil anything, but it's a very, very different movie. And there's so many people who hate it. But most of the criticism I see deals with continuity and, quote, potholes, unquote. And for me, that's not what the movie's about. It's dealing with huge mythological issues and, mm-hmm. and character. It's very character driven. And I found that fascinating. It's not a great film, but it's trying something really different with the genre. And I was impressed. So let's get past continuity and plot holes, please, and just deal with themes. And yeah, themes and ideas is what we're trying to go with.
Well, and I think we have managed to solve both Marvel and DC's problems with not just the multiverse, but with continuity right here in the last 45 minutes. So good for us.
Actually, we mirrored it by saying we can solve it, but never actually do.
Are you talking like a mirror universe?
That's backwards thinking. Let's take a break and talk about scary stuff.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
And we're back. Paul, you recommended Witches by Scott Snyder and Jock for our reading enjoyment this week. Would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, I will. Fear is subjective. What might be frightening to one person might not even cause a shudder in another. So being able to articulate your own personal fears in a way that makes another feel the same way, that's what separates good horror from the mediocre. To make the ordinary terrifying, the mundane sinister. To take an unsettling moment and turn it into a shared cathartic experience. When writer Scott Snyder was a child, he and a friend would make up stories about a group of occultists living in the woods outside their remote Pennsylvania town. It was just harmless fun. But years later, as an adult, Snyder would return to those woods and he felt something. An uncanny feeling that those woods were waiting for him, that there were shapes in the shadows anticipating his return, and that buried memories have lives of their own. Snyder took that feeling and he turned it into the basis for Witches, a 2014 six-issue limited series published by Image Comics, written by Snyder and illustrated by Mark Simpson, better known by the pen name Jock. Witches tells the story of the Rook family, focusing on the daughter Sailor. Sailor is bullied relentlessly by a schoolmate, and when that schoolmate disappears mysteriously, Sailor is suspected of foul play. Though nothing can be proven, rumors persist to the point where the Rooks are forced to leave and relocate to a nearby town. There, they try to put the past behind them as they deal with Sailor's anxiety and depression, Father Charlie's recovery from alcoholism, and Mother Lucy's injuries from a recent car accident. But the rumors follow them, and their new town turns out to have sinister secrets all its own. In time, Sailor and her father Charlie uncover generational plots and conspiracies involving macabre creatures in the woods, terrifying monsters that devour those who have been singled out or pledged by others in return for a reward. And Sailor becomes trapped in a web of selfishness, lies, and cruelty. It is a seemingly unwinnable situation where Sailor and Charlie must make the choice to sacrifice themselves to escape the evil or be consumed by it. With Witches, Scott Snyder crafts a story that shakes you, and Jock's haunting imagery makes the unease and fear tangible. But there's more to this story than just creatures in the night, more than just creepy visuals. Overall, this is a story about trauma, and the decisions one makes to either overcome it or run from that trauma. A good horror story makes you feel more than just afraid. It should unsettle you. It should make you confront ideas you'd rather not think about. But in doing so, it makes you look at the world a little bit differently. And it lets you know that by confronting evil, it can be overcome. Brian, what'd you think of Witches?
So I had, I feel like this is the caveat every time is I had read this once before back in the day. And, this is a very intriguing comic. It certainly matches your intro because I definitely, there's more going on than just the incredibly horrifically presented witches themselves. And obviously there's a lot of emo in this comic, and which I appreciate on some levels, and other levels I'm kind of like, ooh, this is a product of its time in some ways.
Well,
this is a really good comic.
You sound hesitant, though.
Well, no. And it's stunning visually. As a matter of fact, I think visually it captures me more than the narrative. And I would also like to, you mentioned, Jock's art. Matt Hollingsworth colors.
Oh, yeah.
On this are phenomenal. And part of me is I love Jock's art in general. I mean, I am a fan of Jock.
I'm taking that out of context and use it differently.
Yes, as you should. But I'm a big fan of Jock's art across. I mean, he's done a lot of work. But to me, the coloring just really, Matt Hollingsworth really, and I think I feel like I've sung his praises before. I think mm-hmm. we have, you know, he's like one of the great colorists. I think like his work, his coloring work with Jock's art is the superstar of this comic.
Oh, it's yeah. The art, we could just spend the rest of the, we could just jettison the story and just talk about the art because it's so good. And the creatures are, you know, the witches themselves are rendered so, like you said, horrifically. And there's just, they're so unique and they're terrifying, and just the that little noise, the chit 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 noise. Yeah, the art is what puts this over the top. This would have been a good story, but the art makes it a very good story.
Yeah, it really, the story strikes me very much. It has a lot of the classic sort of DC and EC mm-hmm. Type horror elements. In some ways, this is a throwback or almost a retro horror story. And I mean that as a compliment. But the emo stuff is what pulls it into a more contemporary reading.
Right.
And when I say emo, I should clarify. I'm not trying to say emo as a pejorative. I'm not. Sailor's situation and Charlie's situation, the dad, Charlie is the dad of Sailor, the daughter. Right. Are very what I would consider contemporary readings in, you know, they're dealing with things that older horror comics never would have because we didn't talk about it at the time. We
right.
didn't talk.
Yeah. So essentially Charlie is a former recovering alcoholic who hasn't been present in his family's life for several years and trying to make amends. And he feels the weight of guilt about that. Whereas Sailor is an angsty, depressed teenager in high school who's constantly picked on.
Right.
And at the time of this story, she's in a new town, in a new school, meeting new people with this troubled past.
There are suggestions of other things about her that they don't cover strongly, but suggest that, you know, are also, I think, come into play. I'm not addressing those because it's suggested and I don't think it's germane.
Right. Well, this is one of those stories where I wish it had been longer. Instead of a 6-issue arc, if it had been 12 issues, you know, just to allow the themes to be explored a little bit more.
Well, there was supposed to be more of this.
And by all accounts, there will be. There was a one-shot. There was like a prequel one-shot. The bad preview, egg.
The image... what is it? Image did that sort of previews catalog for a while where they had the Negan story. It was their, what was it? Image Plus or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but it was like an actual kind of magazine where they would, you know, pimp their upcoming release. It was like previews and Marvel previews and DC previews. Right. But then they would attach at the end of each of those a part of a story, and it started with the Negan thing, but then the last ones had like a further witches story.
Well, there was a one shot 2018, I think it was. It was just it's called Bad Egg, and it was a prequel, kind of leading. You know, you sit to see right. the families lead up to this, which is fine. It's good. I mean, got the same feel to it, but just to let this particular story expand a little bit more, regardless of I think there is more coming. And there's always been talk of a movie adaptation or a series, but just for this story, Charlie and Sailor both have issues and they could be series on their own, just each character dealing with their stuff. And as far as the mother is concerned, Lucy, her heel turn at the end, it seemingly comes out of nowhere to me. I don't know if you got that same feeling.
It does. And I have to say, like, when I first read this, I read this again. This is why we do collected edition as opposed right. to individual comics. My first reading of this was the individual issues. You know, I'm still a floppy reader. You know, one thing on series like this, which I think is intriguing, is like, again, you go back and read it together, because once I knew the ending and then I went back and reread it, I saw hints, but I sure as heck would not have caught those hints reading it month to month.
Those hints are incredibly subtle. And yes. for a mother to basically kill her daughter is, you need a little bit more than just subtle hints seated. You know, that's a big major villainous turn. You need more motivation for that sort of thing. And you kind of get that. The last issue kind of fills in a lot of lore, but that's why I don't need to know everything. I don't need to know where the witches came from or what their, you know, motivations are. I don't need any of that, because I like the ambiguity of these things just in the woods.
Right. It's a horror comic about bad things in the woods and bad humans doing bad things with the bad things in the woods.
Right. And it's about it's about the characters overcoming their own flaws and their own trauma. And right. that's kind of like the metaphor of there's something evil hidden in the dark woods that'll come out when you least expect it.
It's an age old story.
Exactly. But when I say I wish it had been expanded, it's just to be... Like
go ahead.
No, when I say it, I would have liked to have seen it expanded just to get more character study, just to find out a little bit more about Charlie's background, because you get that in sort of these little flashbacks. He obviously had a tough time of it and was... It hints at him being abusive.
I think he was abusive, and I don't mean physically abusive.
No, mentally, yeah.
Physically or sexually abusive. He was certainly not neither of those
right.
In any way, shape, or form. But he was it's rough. Those flashbacks are rough.
Right.
He was a shit, and I don't know if you're going to edit that out or not, but he was a shit.
Yeah, he was. And that leads to Sailor's anxiety and trust issues. So that would have been neat, nice to be explored more. And I would like to know what the heck's up with her mom. You know,
yeah, the mom. So we get the vaguest hint of a backstory to the mom, right? In the right. is it the last issue or whatever when she does the heel turn, as you said, and you know, so she makes a reference to, you know, her family's history with these witches, and but we really don't like even her reference to it. So the comic starts off with the Cray family, right?
Yes.
Is it the Cray family? Right. You know, we start off the comic starts off back in how many years ago is it? 1910, I think.
Right.
So we see this thing that the Cray family, and they're involved with the witches and this concept of pledging. You know, it's a mother trapped in a tree. Like, that's one of the great things about this comic is the being trapped in the tree thing.
Yeah.
It's really creepy. And so there's a son who is outside, and the mother's trapped in the tree. The witches are coming to take her away. This is 1910. This is a flashback. It's the Cray family, and her son, who is, I think, named Elliot, basically tells her he pledged her, or pledged is pledged. That's a phrase that comes up a lot, right, in this comic. You know, so there's this shitty little kid telling his mom that she's going to die because he pledged her for whatever it is that he wanted. Flash forward, right, to contemporary times, where Lucy is talking about how her family had a history of the pledging. Every time they say pledge, I think of, like, you know, wood cleaner.
I know. It's like every time I dust. Pledged is pledged.
So we flash forward and she talks about the history, but then she refers to another person from the Cray family, Billy, I think. But she talks about it being a great-great-grandparent. And I was like, well, the timing makes that... There's some weird time continuity in this that I don't quite follow. That's the closest we get to Lucy, the mother's sort of history.
Right. And now, see, I would have liked to have seen more about just her in general, her motivation. Mm. She talks about, Lucy says that Charlie's darkness, like his alcoholism, made the witches find them again. And I was like, well, Charlie's not pledged and his family's not pledged. So is she just projecting, using Charlie's fault as a way to hide her own, you know?
Right. It's her family's history that has kept, I mean, I know we're jumping all over on the plot here, but I think most folks listening to this have probably read this comic. So it's Lucy's family. So somehow Lucy's family escaped the witches, but some of them were pledged, some of them weren't. I can't quite follow some of this, which again goes to your point about would be nice to have a little bit more backstory. But yeah, it wasn't Charlie's darkness that brought them. It was her family history that brought them.
Exactly. So it would have been nice to know, is she just, you know, using that as an excuse to hide her own guilt? Or did Charlie actually do something? The way the story is told. Now, I just want to get this out. I like this. I like it a lot. I think it's I think it's a really good story. Everything I'm saying here are just minor quibbles. But in the way that it's told, there are jumps in time and flashbacks and fantasy and dream sequences. And I find that it sometimes gets muddled. It's not always immediately obvious what's happening in the present timeline and which is a flashback or which is just a dream.
And I think it's a device that Snyder is using that I don't think necessarily works.
I agree. I get where he's going, or I get what the idea is. He wants to muddle those things, but it's muddled so much that it kind of gets lost. When you're already in a supernatural, creepy, atmospheric, when you're muddling that, it needs a little bit of definition so that you understand exactly what's going on. I was never lost. There were times like, oh, is that happening now? No, that's a flashback. But it, like I said, it gets a little bit, it gets a little bit confusing, but not so much that it takes you out of the story. That being said, it does add, and I think it's trying to unsettle you, which it does. Yes,
and which it does.
You know, to get back to the beginning, we're all over the place. The story itself is very simple. Family moves to a new town. They all have problems. For some reason, Sailor is having these creepy incidents at school, and then eventually it all culminates in her getting kidnapped in the woods and the dad has to go find her.
Right.
And then the big reveal happens at the end. So it's a very straightforward story. There's not a lot as far as the events are concerned. Very conventional horror story. What sets this apart are two things. It's the inner lives of the characters and the visuals. That's what sets this apart and makes it better. So that's it. Thanks everybody for listening.
That's all right. And next week.
Yeah, so it's very much a tone piece, an atmospheric piece that it gets you into the head of these characters. It's mostly Charlie and Sailor. And you'd find out that the town has a long history of pledging people. I'm surprised there's anyone left in that town. So it looks like they just pledge each other.
It feels like they would just be pledging each other until there was like one of them left.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, to that point, though, it's to clarify, I mean, it's the concept of pledging is that you pledge someone to get something from the witches and the witches will grant you your wish as long as you give them somebody to eat. And you know, that's what, you know, they're eating these people. Yeah, so that's what the whole pledging thing is. And, you know, it's throughout the whole, you know, pledge, just pledged, you're pledged, we got pledging here, pledging there, pledge of allegiance,
pledging everywhere. With a pledge here and a pledge there.
and yeah, I mean, it is a good point. It's like, how is anybody left? I mean, it feels like there would be, and why are the witches not able to just get people and eat them on their own?
That doesn't bother me so much because, you know, you can just wave your hands and go, because it's magic. You know, I kind of like the ambiguity of the witches, that they're just, I mean, there's so many things that are hinted at. Like they go into the witches' lair, their pit, and there's some of them that have grown so big they've embedded themselves in the walls. Right. That's only just thrown out there as one line, and it kind of makes you go, wow, what's up with that?
And it looks creepy.
And it looks creepy, yeah.
Thank you, Jock, again.
And I think that's perfectly fine. The witches, the ambiguity of the witches is cool and fine with me. The ambiguity.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the ambiguity of the people, that's not okay with me. Like I said, the big one for me is the Lucy thing.
You just, part of why you don't see it coming, even though there were a few hints here and there, is because it just, it doesn't make sense in the long run. And the overarching story, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't.
And at what point did she pledge Sailor?
Yeah. And she doesn't give any indication that she, I mean, she says, you know, I love her so much. I love her so much, but we need to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. Well, no, there's no indication of why you would do that.
Right. Well, it's, I think, ostensibly to break the curse, the family curse. But there's also no indication that that curse ever really ends.
Right.
You know, was it just so she could walk again, because Lucy's in a wheelchair to begin with. But, you know, there's like a part early on in the comic where Lucy is a doctor and she's in the hospital and she's befuddled by, so they have this young boy who was hit by a car or something that she's taking care of, and he's recovering quickly, right? And she's there in the hospital, like as his primary care physician or whatever, and she's expressing surprise by how quickly he's recovering. And then, you know, someone has changed out his, you know, the little bag that they hang, that they, you know.
Intravenous,
they put the juices in your body. And she's like, wait, this bag looks different. Did someone change this out? Because it's a different color. And so she's acting confused.
Right.
By all of this. So if she really has this history, and it feels like she should know what that is.
Exactly.
Right? And yeah. And then she doesn't, but I thought that she wanted them to move to this area because that's where the witches were the most powerful. So did she, when did she pledge Sailor? We don't know. And maybe that's not important.
No. Well, she did pledge the schoolmate, Annie. She pledges Annie to try to get the witches off of the family curse.
Right. So Annie was this bully that was bullying Sailor before they moved to Litchfield, which is where they are,
yeah,
where most of this story takes place. So she pledges Annie to try to get rid of the curse. And Annie is this bully that's been picking on Sailor. And that's a really disturbing bullying scene.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not comfortable with it in many ways, but then that's horror. You want to be discomfited. Yeah, I can't quite figure out, so Annie wasn't good enough. The bully that the witches did take, that Sailor gets blamed for killing.
Right. Essentially, Lucy is pledging Annie, the bully, to get the curse off of her, but that's right. Not good enough. So now she has to pledge Sailor, but it's not removing the curse. It's making her walk again, because she was in a car accident by hitting a witch.
Yes.
In her car. It's very strange.
It's part of the, you know, there's a little bit about this that doesn't, this is, again, I enjoy this comic. It's really good. But, you know, most horror films, if you really think about them too much, they don't make a lot of sense.
That's blasphemy. No, they don't. Let's
run upstairs.
And that is not the point of horror. I mean, I guess I should just throw my feelings out here. Yeah. Horror is, it's not about the killing. It's not about the haunting. It's not about the real world stuff. It's about, it's metaphor and allegory. Right. A haunting is about, you know, memories. As an allegory of trauma, this does a great job of that. And and nitpicking the details, talking about plot holes, which I just rallied against in our previous section. This is really secondary. Right. This is just us nitpicking things because that's what we do on this show.
You know, yeah, because I mean the overall horror is strong. I mean, you know, you're in a, you have a, we haven't even talked about the woman who had survived. And, you know, I mean, they bring up this concept of the Irons, and the Irons are these people who be opposed to the witches.
They're witch hunters, and you know, that kind of brings in the whole Winchester Brothers supernatural aspect of it. Guess you never watched Supernatural.
Never watched Supernatural.
Okay. Anyway, there are people who go around hunting and killing monsters. And that kind of that just vaguely hinting at the Irons being the people who are witch hunters.
And to me, that was like one of the most intriguing parts about this. I'm sitting there going, oh, you know, this woman without her legs, because she survived, you know, the witches.
Yeah, the witches ate her legs, which is really creepy right there.
Yeah, and she had all this, you know, this information about the town. She had all of these sort of anti-witches goo and bullets.
A goo called the stink.
A goo called the stink. That's not even talking about the pledge juice that we encounter later. You know, like that to me is like she introduces this concept of this group of witch hunters, and then just kind of like she just gets, you know, she leaves the story hanging, as it were.
Well, that's an interesting thing too. It's like they said the witches or the town people, I forget which, they put mites on her, and the mites make you want to kill yourself. And she's telling this story as she's killing herself, which is like really creepy and just conceptually,
that's really good.
It's awful. It's really dark. Yeah, it's really good. Wow.
I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible.
It's horrible in the way that it should be horrible.
Yes, but it's really well presented. And when that scene was over, I was like, I'd like to know more about that. Can we do more of that?
Right. Yeah, this is the part where I was, again, it's like there's all these kind of what I call like the minor quibbles my major quibble though is at the end when a sailor sprays the townsfolk with pledge.
That's a quibble? I thought that was great. I was like, what a great idea.
Where did she get it? How did she put it in this yard thing?
Kind of like there's a fertilizing some really sprayer.
Suspension of disbelief, I think, that's going here. But you know, when she's crawling. Okay, so at the end, when she's trying to escape the house, right? And Dad has run out and is engaging the witches, you know, to distract them. Basically, Charlie is giving up his life to save his daughter.
He's rubbed pledge on himself and rubbed pledge on Lucy, the mom, in order to sacrifice them. So that Sailor has time to escape.
Sailor has time to escape. So Sailor goes running out. She doesn't have anything in her hands when she's running away. And she goes down and into the house and, you know, through the basement and out this window in the basement. And she comes out and there's a bunch of townspeople sitting there waiting for her. And then she just grabs like one of those, it's a hose attached to like a yard spray or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little thing there. And she just starts spraying the townspeople. When the hell did they put the pledge into that little spray bottle?
Just, you know, scene deleted.
She didn't have time.
Oh, I thought that was a great hero moment. I was like, that's so fun. She sprays all the townspeople so the witches go after them.
And then pledges the townspeople. It's an excellent, you know, and then she jumps in a car and drives away, and that's the end of the...
Well, first she's attacked by, you know, stereotypical sheriff who she stabs in the throat. But yeah, I mean, and again, that's, you know, gets down to this, you know, the sheriff kind of reveals his plan. It's that stereotypical bad guy monologues and tells the...
Yeah, the sheriff is very cocky.
But he's kind of the guy who, I'm so surprised he hasn't pledged every damn person in that town, because he's just that kind of a guy. Yeah, but again, these are not plot holes. They're just information we were not given. Which is why I would like to say it. I wish this was a 12-issue arc, so we could just kind of get little things expanded more. But overall, it does not diminish from my enjoyment of the comic.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. And there are a lot of really interesting, subtle moments. The fact that Charlie has a tattoo of a Ferris wheel. And the Ferris wheel is, of course, that's where he had his awakening, I guess.
Yeah, the moment of clarity, I think that's called.
Yeah. Because it was also a moment of great emotional abuse that he was inflicting on Sailor.
And he put her in danger.
Rather extreme danger, you know. And, you know, so, I mean, it's one of those, like, little subtle things. But it may not even be subtle, because they show him with that tattoo a lot. But all the flashbacks lead to his interaction with Sailor, lo these many years hence, that culminated in a really rather horrible moment on the Ferris wheel that was not horror in the horror of the other, but horror in the horror of the self.
And that's where this, you know, that's the main point of this story is. It's the trauma that people go through and how they overcome it by connecting with each other and making amends. Otherwise, if you don't come to grips with that, you'll get eaten alive. it's it does what horror does best, which is take a horrific situation and make it a metaphor for your inner struggle.
Reflecting real life.
Right.
I enjoyed the hell out of this comic visually. Sorry, I felt like I was just leading to a wrap up, which maybe we weren't doing, so I didn't want to interrupt you. So you could cut that and keep going.
Oh, no. I do real quick about the art. So stylized and so brilliant. Like you said, the colors are great, but then there's also these backgrounds, like these splatter splashed backgrounds that are kind of subtly overlaid and underlaid on all the images, which just gives it this unsettled feeling. It's stunning work.
He leaves it, you know, you don't get a clear picture of the witches, not really, because everything's shaded and dark, and you get a form of them, but you know, a lot of times film in particular, comics too, it's a visual medium, often will show not tell, or will tell not show. And I think, you know, with what Jock does on this, and you know, it just, nothing is fully defined.
Yeah, so you'll get the witches and it's just like close up of teeth or a, you know, an eye socket or, you know, right, a claw. And it's very unsettling, especially like you mentioned the tree stuff. People get sucked into a hole in a tree and you just see their eye or their mouth in this like knot hole in the tree. And it's so creepy.
Yeah.
Charlie finds his brother who's been in there. And it's just, you know, him just saying, I can't feel my legs. What happened to my legs? And it's like, oh my God, this is awful. This is so horrific.
And I kind of want to give a shout out to Uncle Reggie, who dies horrifically in the tree and nobody really seems to care.
Yeah, poor old Reg. And he was just doing his best. He was the only stable person in the story. And he very unceremoniously gets tree eaten.
Treating.
Overall, I really recommend this story. I think it's very well done. All my minor quibbles about, I wish it was longer, I wish it was expanded, I think that's just more me as a reader wanting more.
This is good comics, and our point is to quibble sometimes, but it's you know our point is to praise or to not, if said piece deserves.
I'm a fan of horror and horror comics and movie, just horror in general, but especially comics.
This is right up your alley.
Yeah. Horror comics are not always good. How about that for a subtle comment? It's very difficult to express fear in a comic, but when it's done well.
It's a way of experiencing the medium that sometimes makes it trickier.
Exactly. But when it's done well, it can really unsettle you. And I think this achieves that. It's an unsettling comic with a really good themes. It's a good story told with some clunky devices, I guess. How would you call it?
But ultimately, the psychological horror of it overwhelms the clunkiness of some of the aspects. And again, visually stunning.
So I highly recommend Witches. Read it. It's good stuff.
Yep. I think we're both a fan.
And regardless of Justice League, I think Scott Snyder's quite a good comic book writer.
He can be.
And Jock, of course. My goodness. Keep the Jock coming.
I couldn't.
I'm a Jock supporter. On that note, next time on an all-new edition of the Collected Edition, what will we be reading, Brian?
Paul, we will be reading Starman, Sins of the Father, issues 0-5 by James Robinson and Tony Harris, the introduction to the very classic run of Starman that James Robinson did for DC, these many years ago. So yes, I've been dancing around doing Starman for years, I think, and so we're finally going to dive into the first trade of Starman.
Excellent. That's really good. And it gives me the opportunity to sing David Bowie on the next episode.
Oh, I think I speak for all of us when I say I hope that you do not.
All right. Remains to be seen. That is really great. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Of course, leave a comment on individual episodes. I'd love to hear your feedback. All the information will be in the end tag.
And please correct us on our multiverse history.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or just weigh in because on your feelings.
Because, Lord, I can't keep up with it.
Yeah, just leave your thoughts and feelings on the multiverse. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it everything at once? Thanks again, everyone, for listening. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.